Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gord, and I am an alcoholic from Ottawa, Canada. I want to welcome you to the marathon, one of the marathon meetings of the 2005 International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. And our topic tonight is Step 13. Could you please help me open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad you're all here, especially newcomers, in keeping with our singleness of purpose and our third tradition, which states that, quote, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. We ask that all who participate confine their discussion to their problems with alcohol. This meeting will be taped in its entirety. Tapes of this and other meetings are available by filling out the forms in your convention materials or by visiting the taping table, which has just been relocated inside the front door of the Convention Center North. And this taping is being done in the spirit of carrying the message. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and film. Thus, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker, indeed no AA member, be identified by full name or photograph in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help other problem drinkers who wish to share a recovery program with us, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. The format of this meeting is that the first speaker will share for 15 minutes, the second speaker shares for another 15 minutes, then the chairperson will call in members of the audience to share. We ask that you please limit your sharing time to three minutes so that we can have as many people as possible to participate, which is what this is all about. I will gently remind you to stop if you go over the 3 minutes. And as a reminder, we have an hour and 15 minutes in total, so we break at 8:45. First, I'd like to have Dave R. from the No Name Group in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, to come up and read the 12 steps.
My name's Dave, and I'm an alcoholic. Sober today by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood them. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
I'll now ask Linda M. from the Beaches Group in Toronto to come up to read the 12 traditions.
Good evening, friends. I'm an alcoholic, a grateful member of the Beaches Group in East Toronto. My name is Linda. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave and Linda. Now I would like to introduce our first speaker for this meeting, Deborah G. from Pasadena, California.
My name is Deborah, and I'm an alcoholic. It's really good to be here tonight. I got sober June the 24th, 1986. My home group is Pasadena, California. It's 185 home group. And like I said, I'm really grateful to be here. The topic is Step 13. And every time I tell someone that, everyone chuckles. You know, I remember when I first got the notice that it would be a topic, step 13. I said, that's not in the book. It's not in the book, step 13. I just had a newcomer ask me. I sponsor people, and I have a sponsor also. And I had a newcomer ask me just recently, and I'm thinking, I'm 19 years sober, and people still don't know what step 13 is, you know. And I guess that's what God wanted me to do, to share today. Step 13, I think, is taking advantage of a newcomer. When a person comes in, at least when I came in, I was very afraid. I was shaking. I had just, when I got here, prior to that, I was going to blow my brains out. I had been drinking every day. I had lost my job. I had separated from my husband. I had been moving with my mom. You know, and I just didn't know what to do. I wanted to kill myself. I hated myself. I had low self-esteem. I just did not want to be living. And when I did get to the program, actually, my husband 12-stepped me. He has 10 days more than I have. And that's how I got introduced to the program. But what happened was I came into the meeting, and I went to a different meetings than he did. So when I came into the meeting, you know, there were people there, men and women, and my self-esteem was so low, I thought that if I dressed up the outside, you know, it would make the inside feel better. And my inside is like a big hole in my gut. And alcohol used to fill that up. It would just, you know, make me numb. Well, now that I wasn't drinking, and I sobered up in the meetings, I didn't go to any recovery homes or anything like that. I sobered up in the meetings. And so when I went into these meetings, I'm looking for something that makes me feel better. I couldn't drink anymore, so I wanted something outside of myself to make me feel better. And, you know, I am so grateful that I came in with a sponsor, because she told me, she said, you stick with the winners, you hang out with the women, women sponsor women. And, you know, at first I said, she didn't know what she was talking about. You know, forget that. You know, so I came in still looking. And I didn't, what happened with me regarding Step 13, I came in, I used to dress a little bit more provocative, I guess you could say. I would have low-cut dress blouses. I have a slit up the side of my skirt, you know, and I came into the meetings like that. And that, what do you think that attracts? You know, people preying on people. That's how I look at Step 13, men preying on women, you know, and trying to take advantage. And I almost got caught up in that, to be honest with you. I went out with a couple of guys, and I was married, and I just believed in that institution. And so I chose not to follow through on all that. But I think about the women that I've sponsored, and I have had them come to me and say, this guy is doing this and this guy is doing that. And, you know, it kind of makes you lose trust, because in AA, you have to trust somebody to share your deepest, you know, feelings and stuff. And if you come in, you got all these things going on, you know, somebody's trying to talk to you, somebody trying to take you out, then you lose sight on your what you're supposed to be working on. Supposed to be working on your steps, supposed to be trying to get sober, you know, you're supposed to be going to meetings, all these things, and you lose sight of what you're supposed to be doing, you lose sight of your primary purpose. And I always tell my sponsees that you don't get in a relationship within the first year. No, it doesn't say that in the book. It does say in the beginning, you know. You know, but I tell them that, and I think I have told a guy who's trying to been talking to one of my sponsors that, you know, why don't you give her a chance to get sober, get her head clear, you know. And usually what happens, and this is the truth, she don't want to deal with him after a year. You know, she's on a stronger path than what he's on, you know. And so, you know, it's kind of like she thanks me because she didn't have to go that route, you know. And that's a success story. But there are some that don't do it, you know, and I am so grateful that I didn't have to go that way, you know, and because you lose, that's what this program is about. It's about trust. It's about caring about people, you know, to try to bring them up and keep them sober, teach them, walk them through the 12 steps, you know, and if they don't have that, you know, what do they have? And then the ultimate goal is to having a higher power, you know, and someone that they can share their experience with and their hopes, you know. And so I always thought that with Step 13, it's just terrible. You know, if Step 13, it's a real part of AA, believe it or not. It's real. It's like everybody can say, yeah, there's Steps 1 through 12, but when you really think about it, that's what a lot of people are doing. There are some people doing that, you know, and what do? You just try to talk to your sponsees or you yourself, you know what you're supposed to be doing, you know, and as long as you stick to that, I think just one day at a time, you can stay here. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Our next speaker is Mary H. from Nepean, Ontario.
Good evening. I am an alcoholic, and my name is Mary. My home group is Barhaven Tuesday night in Barhaven, Ontario. And my dry date is December 24th, 1990. Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? I chose December 24th because that's when I finally came to. That's when I finally knew that I was an alcoholic, because prior to that, and I did have one drink on December 24th. Prior to that, I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because the man I was living with didn't want to marry a drunk, and I didn't want to be one. And I came in to prove that I was not an alcoholic. And that didn't work. I am an alcoholic. I'm okay with that today. A little bit about my background, because step 13 is also very important to me, even though it's not in the book. And I talked to my husband about that, because how do you talk about something that's not in the book? And of course, you go to your experience, strength, and hope with it, right? Well, growing up, I lived in a very abusive home, very abusive, and my father was an alcoholic. I only say that because I carry around one of his medallions. He got sober in Saskatchewan, as a matter of fact. Where did that guy go? He's gone. Anyway. Oh, back there. All right. Thank you. My dad got sober there. My dad, unfortunately, couldn't stay sober because he wasn't able to make some of the changes he needed to make to live with himself. I'm also a survivor of sexual abuse, childhood sexual abuse, and my dad couldn't live with that. It's sad because I've, through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned to love my dad, the 12 steps. You know? And I've learned to, I was able to forgive him before he died. I think it was, I don't even know anymore. It was April 6th, 2000, so it's got to be 5 years now. But I was able to learn to love him. The thing that he taught me, though, growing up, was that I was worth one thing and one thing only, and that was sexual. And so when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, all I knew about myself was that I was a sexual being coming into a program full of men, you know? And I was terrified of the men, but I didn't know how to even, you know, communicate with them, because all I knew was the one thing. And that's what Debbie was talking about. Some of us are very vulnerable when we come in here, you know? So I was 13th stepped, you know? In the first 9 months of my stay here, in my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, I thought this was wonderful because the man looked like Kenny Rogers, and I was at that time so deeply in love with Kenny Rogers. He was a very handsome man. I've changed. It's now Mel Gibson. So if you have an Australian accent, you never know what could happen. Well, I know. I have my most recent 13th step in the audience here. It's been 11 years, and I'm staying, I hope. Anyway, when I first, I mean, he was just like Kenny Rogers, and he had money, and he had this home, and everything that I thought I wanted. And, he was really, really good to me. And I fell. I fell right into that. I don't remember his name today. You know? Because I was just so caught up in needing to fill that hole, that empty space that was inside. After that little excursion, I'll say, I went back out. I had that one drink. And when I came back in, the place that I was staying, I was staying with it was in a home for at the time women in Al-Anon, and I knew I needed Al-Anon because of my dad. I knew I needed Al-Anon because of the guy that I was so deeply in love with and had to be around, and you know, it was everybody else's fault, of course. So I figured Al-Anon was the best place for me because that's what I thought Al-Anoners did at the time. They blame everybody else and they get better. I was pretty sick. It doesn't work that way either, you know. And that took me a while to learn. I was staying there and he kept telling me to stay away from the men. Now stick with the women because the men aren't going to help me. And I didn't believe him. He was a priest. What did he know about sex? You know, what did he know about anything except his God? And he was a Catholic priest, and I was Catholic and still am. I just, Catholic priests were, you know, I didn't trust them, didn't believe them, you know. But this is where I met Kenny Rogers, you know, at this home, because after a while he opened it up to alcoholics as well, and that's what happened. So you know, right in my first year, and even my second first year, I was just so totally vulnerable to everything. You know, I wanted so much to fill that empty space, to feel wanted and loved, that I did anything. And because of what I was taught as a child, that's the only thing I had, I thought. Well, today is so different. I did 4 years with an Anglican minister and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and a counselor. And he worked very intensively with me on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned about me. I learned that I was not just this sexual being sitting over in a corner being preyed on by everybody else. I learned that I could say no and that I was going to be okay when I said no. That even if these men walked away, that was probably better for me than anything else. Because then I was taking care of me. I was doing the things I needed to do to become sober and feel good about me. While I was in that session with my counselor and my Anglican minister, that's when I went to a meeting in Carp, Ontario, which is just a little short ways from my hometown, from Ottawa. And I heard my husband speak, and I went home, told my daughter that I just met the man I was going to marry. He didn't know me from Adam. You know? And I knew the game. I'm a woman. You know, I knew that a slit up the side of my dress and across the legs at the proper time was going to get him where I wanted him. You know, I also took a chaperone, and he was a really big biker. You know, because I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my husband. You know, because we women are not, we're, you know, we come in and we see a good looking man and we want the same thing too, you know. It's just that we want it a little differently. We want to talk to you first. You know, that helps. So I kept my chaperone for 6 months, you know, and he came with us everywhere. People thought, my husband thought I was dating him. At the time, I wasn't. He was taking care of me because I knew. And I told him. I told him exactly what I wanted from my husband, you know. And he said, "Well, okay, I'll come with you for a while," you know, because he was no fool. So women do it too. You know, we're not immune to that. You know, and one of the things when I told people in my home group that I was talking on step 13, of course we got all the giggles. You know, I told my husband's sponsor I was talking on step 13, and we had a really good laugh about it because, you know, I knew the game. I knew how to get my husband, and I talked to his sponsor about it, you know, afterwards, and yes, that was step 13, and I did it well, you know, because that's what we do. He's been in the program a little longer than me, so he knew what he was getting into too. You know, he likes to pretend that he doesn't, or he didn't. Yeah, I know he knew. But you know, since that time, I've learned a lot about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was, I think, 3 years sober when I met him, and he was 4. And since then, I've watched. Like I have my very first sponsee in the program, and she's been my sponsee forever. And I remember taking her to a meeting one time, and a gentleman that bounces from one relationship to another started talking to her and going up to her all the time, and I was watching her really close because she was pretty vulnerable. She was in a really bad marriage at the time. And I walked up to her one time and I put my arm around her and I said, "You know what? The one thing I want you to know," and I was looking at him, "the one thing I want you to know is that you never have to go to bed with any of the men that talk to you." And he just kind of looked at me, turned around and walked away, you know, because I know this man, you know. And I, you know, my sponsee has since, she's been in the program a little longer and she's now dating, living with a very nice man. He was willing to come to me first. He was willing to talk to me and you know, we talked a lot and we stayed together a lot, my sponsee and him. And, I've known him since I first came into the program. I wanted him too, but I was new then. You know, I wanted anybody at that time. Today I'm much better. I'm very happy with my most recent step 13 and you know, it's through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and my higher power that I'm able to stay with him. Because I am an alcoholic. I like changing. You know, it can be very difficult to stay with a person that isn't, he's also an alcoholic, and it can be difficult to put two alcoholics in one room with two different opinions and not either want to leave or kill each other, you know, and I don't want to kill him a lot anymore because he works really hard on his program, and I know I work hard on mine because we can be together and we can work very well together as a couple. I don't want another step 13 in my life. You know, I'm very pleased with where I am today. And I know, like, if you're new today, you know, women stick with women, men stick with men, because you know what? Even if you're a man, you're coming in here and you're vulnerable, and there's women out there. Like Debbie said, low-cut dresses, you know, slits. I don't have a slit up the side of my dress today, but you know, there's women out there that come in here and they dress in such a way that they want to take you home just for a night would be good. And that might feel good for a moment, just like that drink would feel good for that moment. But you know, you got to wake up with yourself the next morning, you know, and we women and men, It's hard enough coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and accepting the fact that you're an alcoholic, but coming in and accepting the fact that you're an alcoholic and then going through that kind of stuff, it's just not worth it, you know. So stick with your own perspective, male or female. I can't even remember what you call that. Today, but because it's just not worth it. It's so hard to get on the right track, you know, to begin with, and you know, add something like that and it just throws you right off. It's too hard. I went back out after that gentleman, and I don't know his name. I went back out and I had that one drink because I knew that I was still no good. You know, that's what I felt. I never want a newcomer to have to go through that. And any newcomer that comes in and I'm around, if a man comes after you, you can bet I will be there beside you, letting you know that you don't have to sleep with him. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary. What a powerful subject. The floor is now open for members of the audience to share. We have two microphones there and there. If you wish to share on this topic, please line up at the microphones. We ask that you please limit your comments to three minutes each. And the chairperson has been instructed to enforce that time limit. I will try. Thank you very much. Okay, first microphone.
Okay, thank you. My name is Ralph. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ralph.
And thank you for both sharing. When I first read that it was going to be step 13, I said, let me go find out some juicy stories here. And my friend said, you going to share after they speak? And I said, now what do I got to say about step 13? But, you know, the more I heard you guys talk about it, it's a very serious and very dangerous thing, you know. I've known a lot of people, you know, that have come back out, and their yets, they came through, you know. Recently, this girl put herself into a six-month spiritual program because she couldn't get the program once she went out with somebody from, you know, from the rooms of AA. They 13 steps her, and she never made it back, and she became a full-blown crack addict, which she wasn't before. And it's because we're searching for something inside to fill us, and we think that somebody giving us some attention can put us there. And it's really, you know, the worst thing to do. I was fortunate immediately to have a sponsor within the first 2 weeks, and he discussed that with me about, you know, the men with the men and the women with the women. And also he talked about, you know, it's not so much about your self-gratification, but the damage that you could be doing to someone else, you know, because at the beginning it's all about me. And when he explained to me, Ralph, you know, you might have good intentions, but that person doesn't have enough time in the program, you could really put her, you know, and she could lose it, you know, mentally. She could really get obsessed or whatever, you know. So there's more consideration than just what can happen to me. Also, what could happen to someone else. And, you know, now that I've been sober some time, I have a certain responsibility to people that I know that are doing, that are thinking of doing that, to, in a loving way and a gentle way, to go and tell them, you know, you got to watch what you're doing. And if you want to be selfish, you know, you have to have consideration for the other person, because you might go through it and not pick up, but the other person might not. And that's something that I feel very responsible for when I see something like that happening. And, you know, I got to tell you, I didn't think I was going to get back on a pink cloud, and I was totally elated yesterday with the ceremony, and I've been on a pink cloud ever since. So have a great conference.
Thank you. Microphone two.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Irene. And through the grace of a higher power and a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since October 7, 1989. And when I came to this program, I was no spring chicken. I came here after a failed suicide, and because I was so happy, I knew I couldn't go on living the way that I was feeling. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very vulnerable. And at that time, just like now, there are people who take advantage of newcomers. But I was truly fortunate in that there were a lot of good people watching over me and looking after me. And there were some old-timers who told these men to leave me alone. And when some of them persisted, there were a number of big guys that took them out the back and talked to them gently and told them that if they continued, that they would find some other way to get their attention. So I'm really fortunate for those people. And today, that's not necessarily the way it is, because we try to be gentle with everybody. And sometimes we can be too gentle. And today, I am responsible. And when I see someone trying to take advantage of a newcomer, I'm responsible. I have to go up to that newcomer and say, look, this is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and even though we say everybody can get better here, doesn't mean that everybody does get better here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can go up to someone and say, you don't have to give out your phone number. You don't have to tell someone where you work, where you live, what you do for a living, who or where, you know, you live with, or what you're doing. All you need to do is don't drink, go to meetings, and if you stay sober long enough, you'll realize how sick these people really are. And that's been my experience. When I first came here, when I stopped drinking, I started to feel safe in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was told that I didn't have to drink again, and that if I kept going to meetings, I'd be okay. But the danger is, when we start to think that we're safe, sometimes we're not. And that's why I feel that I have a responsibility to the newcomer in AA, or to the other suffering and vulnerable alcoholic who was going through hard times to stand up beside them and walk with them until they can walk for themselves. Thanks.
Thank you. Next one, Lynn.
Hi, my name is Blossom. I'm a recovering alcoholic and drug addict. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. My home group is Crucial Awakening, and I'm just really glad to be here. Hi, everyone. I truly am a child of God and definitely a miracle one. When I saw the 13th step out there, it just brought back some really old feelings, so I'm really glad that it was brought up. I'm just going to give you my experience and strength and hope in regards to that. When I came to the program, I was pretty much down as far as anyone could go. I found out that I was a child that was from a very brutal crime to my mother, and today she even ministers and talks about that. And that's why my name is Blossom. She said something that was horrible that happened to her. She made something good. So by walking around, I can share with other women what it's like. But for me, when I came into the rooms, I had found out that I was a rape child. And that at the end, near the end of my addiction in regards anything to my alcoholism, it just went full blown because I could not deal with that being me being that that substance about that situation. And I came into the rooms. I was quite vulnerable, of course. And they used to give me slogans like, stay with the women. Well, I didn't want to do that because you were just like me. And I didn't like being around women because what are you going to tell me? You're sick and you're here. But to me, men, you know, you listen to me and I could, you know, do my thing on you and you'd listen, you know, because I made that my art. And so I didn't want to listen to the people that gave me advice and suggestions. And so I went with the men. I hung out with the guys because I grew up a tomboy and I did the boys' things and so forth. And I used to hear, to what lengths will you go to for your sobriety? For me, that was finding a man that has some sobriety, and that was what I was going to hold on to stay sober. And that's what I did. I found a man that had 5 years. And he had the work, he had his AA book in his hand, and he had several sponsees, and he was sponsee man. And so if I walked in there and I looked good and he liked me, I knew I had AA because he wanted me. And, you know, he had the AA book. Well, to make a long story short, I ended up leaving my home, moved in with him and his wife, and then to a point where even the rooms, he didn't want anyone to know that he was 13th step, in which I didn't even know what that was. I was just doing my thing. I was going to any lengths to keep sober. And and so he took away the phone. He took away everything so I couldn't call anyone, tell anyone that I was being 13th step. And it almost destroyed me because here I was totally vulnerable. Drugs were nowhere in sight no more. I wasn't drinking, and I had nothing to keep high on. When sex was that's what it did for me, was give me a high, and that's what I was looking for. And so it really destroyed me. To the point that we had our own special meetings. I had a young lady that was a friend of mine as well, and we had threesome meetings. We would go to her house, and we'd have a threesome. And come to find out, she really liked him as well. When I became honest, because I wanted to be honest, I told her what we were doing, and then she wanted to commit suicide, and she was also in the program. And just to show you how the roller coaster of 13 step can go, it can be very dangerous. And so today I share with the women, you know, stay with the women, men stay with the men, and, you know, because they will tell you your stuff. And with that, thank you. I pass.
Thank you. Okay.
Hello, everyone. My name is Michelle, and I'm an alcoholic from Toronto. This is a really important topic for me, and I want to thank the speakers and everybody who's spoken about this so far. I really identified with what you had to say, particularly Mary. I also am an incest victim, and I've also a survivor, and been more than that in my life. It's been teachers and strangers and all kinds of things. So I'm very, very sensitive to this topic. I, like Blossom had mentioned, became in my life what was only valuable was my sexuality. And so before I came into this program, that's what gave me a high, as well as alcohol. And now that I'm here, sometimes I find it difficult to, because we hug one another and we kiss one another and we're all touchy-feely. And sometimes that touchy-feely doesn't sit right with me just because of my previous experience before I came here. And so all I can say is that I know statistically, I don't have the exact statistic, but statistically, particularly women who have had abuse in their life, many, 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 many of them become alcoholics and addicts. And so there's many of us here in this room tonight that have had very similar experiences. And so I'm just speaking from a woman's perspective, but for the men in the group, it might not be a bad idea to ask permission to give that hug. You know, may I hug you? And if that person says, you know, it doesn't feel right for me right now, but I appreciate the offer, to not take that personally, because a lot of times it's not about you, it's about other things. And that person might not want to express that to you, and just to be sensitive about that. I have found in my experience, the very first time I spoke was with my home group, and I did share this with them. And I did find, unfortunately, that there were a few more closer hugs after that, and you know, a little bit longer and a little bit tighter. And I couldn't understand why that happened. And so now I'm learning. I've only had 1 year sobriety, so this is all still pretty new to me. But I'm learning to start to set those boundaries and to very gently say that, you know, this doesn't feel right for me. And so if any of you out there had a similar experience that like myself, just to be able to stand up and create some boundaries around yourself when you need to feel safe is important to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ron. I'm an alcoholic from Montreal.
Hi, Ron.
When I did my fifth step with my first sponsor for the first time, he said to me, after hearing this litany of, let's say, interesting relationships, under no circumstances do you have a relationship with any lady in the fellowship. That said to most people for 1 year, but in your case, it's got to be permanent. I didn't keep that completely. And in fact, I did a 13th step unknowingly. Let me tell you how it happened. About 2 years in the fellowship, I met this lady outside. And I was traveling a fair bit at the time. And I would see her for 3 or 4 weeks at a time. Then I was off traveling. And we would probably see each other on average for about 2 or 3 times a week for, let's say, 5 to 6 months of the year, for a year. And I was at her house one day, and I had gone to the washroom. I'd taken something out of my wallet to give her, and I'd left my wallet on her coffee table. And I came back, and she was reading something in my wallet. And I always kept the Serenity Prayer in the wallet. In this particular wallet, it was in French. And she was French-speaking. And she read this, and she was looking at this. She said, I say this every morning. I say this every night, and often I say it several times during the day. I said, holy shit. Are you an alcoholic? Yeah. Now, she always wondered why I was never available on a Wednesday night, and I always wondered why she was never available on a Friday night. But neither of us ever wondered why the other had never offered us a drink, because we'd been around sober people. The only thing that bothered me is after I asked her, I at the time was in the fellowship over 2 years when we started, but I started to count after she told me what her sobriety date was, and she was only 6 months sober when we started going together. Fortunately, she stayed sober. Thank you.
Thank you.
Evening, friends. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Irene. I really didn't want to come up here. When it was opened up, I said, I don't want to go, but I'm going. I got married in 1969, and we celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary when I was about 6 months sober. And I thought we were working on our marriage for the first time in the 25 years. And 8 months into my sobriety, my very much ex came home and said he was madly in love with somebody else because I wasn't taking care of him the way I used to. I don't blame him for my becoming an alcoholic. What I do regret is that I wasn't given a full year of trying to get my feet solid. The only thing that I had enough sense to do, because you know, as soon as he informed me of this, I said, you're out of here. You know, I'm not putting up with this shit. I'm not going to drink. That's the only way I can possibly stay married to this particular individual was by drinking, and I'm not going to drink. I had a major nervous breakdown because I wouldn't talk to anybody, including my sponsor. But once I came out of the hospital, my sponsor grabbed a hold of me, and she wouldn't let me go. She really, really wouldn't let me go. But then I started gradually working. I wasn't even a year sober at this point. You know, like I'm really new and everything else. And I started gradually just working my way away from her and trying to put my feelers out to various groups in the Toronto area, deciding which group I wanted to be with, etc. And if I'm fully honest about it, I was looking for the males. I wanted somebody that was going to make me feel as though I was still important. And I connected up with a fellow that was brand new in the program. And I think it was the best thing I ever did, because neither one of us wanted a relationship. He was brand new, and he was being told by his sponsor, for God's sake, don't get involved in a relationship. I'd just come out of a 25-year marriage, and it would have been very easy for me to grab a hold of even somebody else that had some length of sobriety. And the two of us instead, we connected up together, and therefore, we weren't partners in any way other than the fact that we could talk. We could share our lives with each other that both of us were really lacking, because I was coming out of the marriage, he was coming out of a relationship, and he was brand new. And it worked for me, but I've been a sponsor. You know, I've had a few young ladies that I have sponsored over the years. My dry date, by the way, is November the 1st, 1993. And I've had to stand up and say no, as the fellows were coming on to them. No. And because it seems to me that the women pick me in the particular groups that I know people, I also know the males, and I'll say no. And this, I totally agree with you, Irene. It's up to us. We are responsible, and we have to remind them that the answer is no. Leave them alone. Because if somebody had come on to me when I was that vulnerable, God only knows whether or not I'd even be alive, because I don't think I would have stopped drinking. And I'd like to say thank you.
Okay. My name's Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
And I felt responsible that I should share and pass this on. It was a little part at the bottom of a page, I think, in one of the grapevines in the late 80s or early 90s. And it talked about the 13th step. And it said there, it was that this 13th step was usually done by people that had part of the first step and part of the last step, the 12th step. And it goes something like this: my life's unmanageable, and I'd like to share it with you.
Hey, family, my name's Ronnie, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Wow, thank you all for being here tonight. It's really good to be in this room. I actually came running to this meeting yesterday to talk about unmanageability, and it was today. But I ended up at another great marathon meeting, which was a blessing. 13th step. Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about me. I'm from New York City. My sobriety date is August 21st, 2003, a date at a time, so I'm working on my 2 years. This is my first convention. It's amazing. I'm having a profoundly spiritual experience. Haven't had a perfect recovery. I'm really scared of the word perfect because it reminds me of control, and I tried to do a lot of controlled drinking, and that didn't work for me either. So don't try to work a perfect program. And I have worked something short of that at times. But I have to say, making love in sobriety is amazing. I'm not going to talk shamefully about it. It's a God-given power, and it's how we all ended up here. However, you know, I mean, some of us got here because our parents were messy drunks at the time. You know, some of us don't know both of our parents. As a child, you know, I definitely didn't know, you know, both of mine. And I was subjected to a lot of sexual abuse and was raped and was molested. I was forced to watch my parents have sex, among other things. And I have to say, it's a really beautiful thing in recovery today to be able to own my body and to take back every part of myself that for whatever reason in that plan of the universe, I was to go through those things. And to anybody out here who's been through similar things, you know, they say share in a general way. Well, sometimes, like, you know what, there's no general way for me to share that's not going to rob me of these experiences that I've grown from. I was 13th stepped, I guess, by a good friend of mine who to this day we talk on almost a daily basis. I had less than maybe 5 months. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences I ever knew. Like, I had never had sex really sober before in a non-codependent way. And I didn't even have a sponsor at the time because my old sponsor, I had trouble, like, working the steps with her. And, you know, she was going through a hard time and wasn't really available at that time. But, you know, out of that, I actually made one of the best friends ever. And he would be totally wrong for me in the future. And, you know, who knows. But, like, I see him go out on dates and he tells me how it went. And I tell him I'm sober dating and I tell him how it goes. And, oh my God, and like it's totally mutually respectful and beautiful and we communicate and we're honest with each other. And, you know, in that time, like I, you know, they say no major changes in the first year. Well, I got back with an old boyfriend that I was with for like 6-7 years and we slowly learned that it wasn't working. No matter how spiritually his path was going and mine, it wasn't gonna work, but it was like respectful and beautiful and honest. And I mean, I have a sponsee now, and, you know, if I catch her looking at, checking out somebody in the rooms on AA campus and stuff, I can tell her what pages to read, and I can help her make her own inventory, and I can help her teach her how I pray on things, and that I'm not perfect, and share my experience, strength, and hope, but I will not deny her her process, because none of us are victims here. And I refuse to take the victim mentality because I did that for 25 years. And look where it got me. It got me fucking drunk. So those experiences are my experience. I don't have all the answers, but, like, it's really great to be able to share this in a room full of, like, people that I know because we've been around together a long time, longer than we know it. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Ian. I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say, I've always been a big fan of, like, AA history. I'm very passionate. I love to read anything I can. And one day, I decided to find out where the term 13th step came from. What I found out was back in the 40s, if somebody was working a program, it was said that they spent every day of their life walking those 12 steps. And they took their 13th step when they died sober. They took the 13th step into their coffin. And 13th stepping back then, if you were 13 stepping out of a person, that meant that as you were dying, drunk or sober, you were dragging somebody else down with you. And I was always under the impression that our current definition of 13 stepping, the way we look at it today, was a new concept. But I found out 13 stepping is mentioned in AA literature. It's in Dr. Bob and the Good Alzheimer's. It talks about the first 13th step, which actually took place on Dr. Bob's operating table. And it was the first woman who ever tried AA. Her name was Liz, and she was from Rochester, New York. She was the first ever woman to ever try AA. And she was 13 steps, and it terrified her. And she ran out of these rooms, and she got sober. 13 years later, she walked back in the room. So she had to go through 13 more years of hell. And that's why I think it's important that we don't just criticize people who 13 steps. We need to tell them what they're doing is wrong. Because it's not them they're hurting, it's the other person they're hurting. I mean, And one of my sponsors is here today. My sponsor taught me well, and I see somebody 13 steps. Somebody, if talking doesn't work, I just smack him across the back of the head. I could do it. I could never imagine 13 stepping somebody because my sponsor, who I listened to, told me not to. I know that it could hurt the other person, and to be honest with you, I am terrified of AA women. They are frightening. Thank you.
Thank you. blame you. Oh, I'm an alcoholic at a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Brooks Bell. Hi, chums. I haven't had a drink of whiskey all day today, and God's grace and the steps and traditions, and I've been sober since the middle of October of 1973. I bring you greetings from the southwest region of Alcoholics Anonymous, San Antonio, the home of the International Convention in 2010. We hope that we can do as good a job as been done here in Toronto. Thank you very much for having a wonderful time. This is my seventh international convention. When I look at the 13th step and I think about that and I think about our beloved fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the thing that comes to my mind immediately is sponsorship. I truly believe that sponsorship is the answer to every problem that we have today in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the young fellows that I sponsor, the fellows that they sponsor, and the fellows that they sponsor, you know, I teach them and I tell them, I say, don't be a predator. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, men are all dogs. I mean, there's no getting around it. I mean, but you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, anything that interferes with sobriety is inappropriate. Period. Anything. And we all got sex problems. I mean, you know, I don't give a damn if it's he-in and she-in, she-in and she-in, he-in and he-in, or me-in and me-in. I mean, you know, I mean, we all got sex problems, you know, but we get drunk over two things in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get drunk over sex and money. Too much, too little of each, or the wrong kind, you know. That's what we get drunk over. Sobriety is a gift. Sobriety is precious. And I'm speaking to you fellas. I can't speak for the women. But I'm speaking to you fellas. If you have some predators in your club, let me tell you how to get rid of them. Because I go to the Clean Air North group in Addison, Texas. You're all welcome to attend the next time you're in Addison, Texas. But don't be a predator in my group, because an old bastard like me will come up to you and say, if you put your arm around that newcomer one more time, I'm going to embarrass you beyond your wildest imagination. And if that doesn't work, we're going to jerk you out to the parking lot and drag you around by the neck behind a pickup truck until you get the message. You know, men work with men. Women work with women. That's the way it works, you know. And once again, you know, anything, friends, that interferes with sobriety is inappropriate. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Loretta, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Austin, Texas. And there's a lot here that I can echo my agreement with. I think the thing, too, is that it's about when it's predatory, it's wrong. Recently, in a group in Austin, it had gotten to a point where there was a man with a lot of years who was systematically preying on newcomer women. You know, they're in the room of AAs with a big book between them, but then a lot more else going on, unfortunately. And it got to the point where the group had a group conscience, and the group contacted GSO World Services and asked, what do we do and what's the precedence? And the feedback they got was that we have to remember what's the primary purpose. You know, the primary purpose of any group is staying sober and helping others to stay sober. And so that when this person was interfering with that process, the group had a group conscience and the group banned this person from the meeting, you know, to make it safe yet again for other women. I'd like to say that that's it, end of story, but as we all know, it happens in every city and every country, okay? And really the true message is not letting anything interfere with a person's sobriety. Unfortunately, a lot of times when I'm working with someone and I say, you know, the suggestion is not to get involved in your first year, and the reason we make that recommendation is because Most of us have done it. Most of us have made that mistake of getting involved in our first year and have gone through a lot of pain, a lot of confusion, a lot of the self-esteem goes even lower, and the shame and the guilt. And for some of us, we don't come back, and that's the real tragedy. That's the real risk. It's a person's life. I think it's just the other thing I do want to touch on is that sex, making love, is a beautiful God-given thing, as was already mentioned. And it's a beautiful thing when you can do it in recovery and you can do it sober and you do it with someone that you love and someone that you have a relationship with. When I was drinking, I had no discernment. It was just something I did to fill that hole in addition to the drugs or the alcohol that I was doing. I was just filling a hole. So when I came into the program and you told me I couldn't do the drugs and alcohol anymore, I went to my next fallback addiction. It was the next thing I knew to change how I felt. And your attraction for me was attractive enough for me because I couldn't see myself. I couldn't see the beauty that I had within me. And so really if just the other thing, too, is men work with men and women work with women. As a lesbian, I also have to say that that's not always necessarily true. It's a matter of working with a winner, working with somebody who is in recovery, working with someone who has a sponsor, who works the steps, who works with sponsees, and who's in the middle of the program, not picking off the weak ones on the fringes of the program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Liz, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic from St. Clair Shores, Michigan. It's right outside Detroit. Hi. First of all, I'd like to, you know, when we say women sponsor women and men, I'd like to remind the women in here about that responsibility statement. Because when I came in 1996, there weren't a lot of women that were ready to sponsor me and give me the attention that I needed. So I ended up with a man sponsor. And fortunately for me, he was a lot like our friend Brooks. And it worked out really good. You know, I can remember him actually coming, and I, you know, we have court sheets in Michigan, and I signed it, and I put my phone number on it, and he walked over to the guy that had handed it to me, and he ripped the entire sheet up. And he said to him, he goes, "You know what? I want to know what your purpose is here." And, you know, I'm always grateful that I've had people like that watch out for me, and that my number one motive for being in Alcoholics Anonymous is not to get a date. My number one purpose to be in Alcoholics Anonymous is to stay sober. Thank you.
My name is Donald McDonald, and I am an alcoholic in Pasadena, California. I'm grateful, and hi, Deborah. I love you. One of the things, when last Saturday when Deborah and I were at a 25th birthday party, she told me she was going to be speaking, and to be honest, when she said the subject matter, I wasn't jealous of the subject matter. I was jealous of the fact that she got to be on a panel, and I didn't. And that was my first reaction. And reflecting on what I've heard so far since we came in late, I'm reminded also that, as was said that just recently, the idea is what is the primary purpose? The principles of this program that are established in Alcoholics Anonymous, not only is the principle to stay sober, but it also, as was Loretta said, you know, the group is more important than the individual. Lest I get confused and think I'm the most important one in the room, or I will be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I hear somebody say that, "You newcomer over there in the corner, you're the most important person in this room." I don't happen to agree with that. Personally, I think we're all important inside of these rooms. And if I forget that, then I get confused. Because I know the best thing I have going for me right now is not only my sobriety history, but also my drinking history. And that relates directly to the topic we have here now. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my wife used to go with me to meetings. That was her way of supporting me. She stopped going because they started calling on her, and she's not an alcoholic. So she felt embarrassed, and I understand why she stopped going. But she heard things that I'm sure we all hear about we don't get involved in a relationship in the first year. My first sponsor reminded me that's not in the big book. It's not in the first 164 pages. What it says is we get back into the stream of life is what it says. Making major decisions is probably up for debate also. Because I don't know about anybody else, but my personal opinion, there are big deals in Alcoholics Anonymous. The loss of a job, the death of a family member, that's a big deal. To me, personally, I've been there and done that. But it's not worth drinking over. That's the priority, staying sober. And I have sponsees, a guy that got married at 6 months sober. Well, he had gone with this woman for 6 years, and they decided it was time to get married. His major concern was going on the honeymoon to Hawaii without me or his father, because I was his sponsor and his dad was sober in the program. And what do you do? And we said, you go on your honeymoon, but you go with her. You're not taking us with you except in your head. So my point here is that, you know, there are individuals that come in, and as we all know, they prey on the new ones, men and women. Mm-hmm. It's not just the men on top of the women. We know that. I've seen it go both ways. And the point being is that it comes to the point where I have to look at what's my part in it. This was already shared about the man from Texas. The idea is that, you know what? If it comes down to the point, how do we know who's going to get sober and who's going to get drunk? We don't know that. But we know today is the theme of this convention. I am responsible. What's my part in it? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm an alcoholic, and my name's Mary Ann. I'm from Ottawa, Ontario, and I was really fortunate. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't any different than most people, I think. I was in a lot of pain, and I couldn't drink, so, you know, I wanted to forget my pain through relationships and sex and all that kind of stuff. So I was very busy my first year trying to find that, even though my sponsor told me no sex the first year. Well, she told me I could have sex the first year. But the second year, I could have somebody else in the room with me when I had it. So I know everybody's heard that one before, yeah. But that, you know, there was no relationships the first year, and of course I thought that was pretty crazy. But I'll tell you that there are a lot of honorable men in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my home group in Ottawa, the Westboro Saturday Morning group, is filled with them. And old-timers, young guys, it's just, you know, and I find that everywhere I go, you know, that sure, you know, there may be other people who take advantage of people and stuff, but I'll tell you that there are, you know, I'm really proud to be part of a community that really is that honorable. But I can say that I haven't always behaved that honorably. And in my first year, I remember I was at a music meeting, and this guy got up to play, and he was a musician, and he played a guitar. And he played the blues. And my knees went weak. And I knew I was in love. And he told me he'd been around AA for a long time, but he'd been in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out. And he'd only really had a couple weeks. But, you know, I had a year. My sponsor told me I could date after a year. But I'm like that guy that was told maybe never. Because I couldn't think. I still couldn't think right, you know. My thinking was still stinking. And I needed people to stand up and say, you're not ready to date. I really did. And I didn't go to my meeting, like my home group, and tell people. I went to his meetings, and his sponsor was there, and other people, and they never said anything to me. And I really wish they had, because I'll tell you that, you know, yeah, I am responsible, but I'm not always bright enough to do the right thing and stuff, you know, and I need people to stand up and be responsible for me too. And I'm so grateful you know, that I'm still here, because, you know, that we're both still sober, but I'm just, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyways, thanks.
We are running out of time. I'm afraid we have time for just one more speaker.
My name's Charles. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a gratefully recovering alcoholic. It was so refreshing to hear what you had to say, that it's not just the men that do this, it's the women. I've had female sponsors call me up and chew me out because one of my sponsees was making eyes at somebody, and I feel it's a two-way street. My job as a sponsor, and I've been very fortunate to get to sponsor a lot of young men between the ages of 24 and 30. And I'm going to tell you something. You tell somebody that age they can't have a relationship, they're going to say, does that mean sex, too? And when you know, if you try to tell them they're not going to have sex, you're fighting an uphill battle. It just doesn't work that way. That's not reality. My job as a sponsor, and I also hear people say, we're not bankers, we're not lawyers, we're not marriage counselors, but that's not true. I've had sponsees that I've had to teach how to write a check out of a checkbook that had never known how to do that. I've had sponsees that had no earthly idea the difference between sex and a relationship. And the first thing I have to do is try to teach them what a relationship is, and that relationship is with themselves. And until they can love themselves and convince me they're loving themselves, then they're really not ready for a relationship. Men are brought up in this world not to, we're not taught relationships. We're taught to succeed and get ahead and do those kinds of things. So relationships is a big part on this thing. They have to learn how to take it to go into a relationship. And I try to spend that time with these young men. But it was refreshing to hear you say that it is both sides of the fence, because it's going to go on as long as AA's around. It's been around ever since Adam and Eve were here. And hopefully we can keep it down the way it should be. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to thank you all for being here, and for those at the microphone for being responsible enough to keep your comments to 3 minutes. You might have noticed a little flurry going on up here while you were speaking. One poor little spider bit the dust, unfortunately. Mary didn't tell you, but that she has arachnophobia. Big time. I'd like to thank Deborah and Mary particularly for being our speakers tonight. If you give her give them a hand, please. It was a difficult topic handled very gracefully. I'd also like to thank Dave R. and Linda for reading the 12 Steps and the 12 Traditions. And if you'd come forward, I've got a couple little mementos for you for participating in the event, Dave and Linda. Now, would those who care to please join me in closing the meeting with our responsibility declaration. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.